Okay, we're in Deuteronomy chapter 4. Once again, want to encourage you, Tyler and I both want to encourage you to be sure that you're staying in your reading because we're going to be going through this fairly quick. We are going to stay pretty true to David, Brother Posey's material. I think I said that before. I just want to remind you. In fact, in a few moments, I'm going to be getting right into the questions and allowing the questions here to kind of guide us through the chapter. We'll do some reading, some reference. But we do want to get into this right away. Okay, Deuteronomy chapter 4. I hope you have your sheets there, because we're going to get right into this here, as I mentioned a moment ago. I want to apologize if I keep clearing my throat. I don't mean to do that, but I've been talking for a couple weeks straight, so I'm just going to get through this. Deuteronomy chapter 4 begins. We've got several sermons from Moses here. All right. And before we get to that first question of listen, what does it mean to listen? I want you to notice what he's saying here and what this is coming off of. So looking at chapter 4, beginning in verse 1, he says, "And now, O Israel, listen." All right. What has he said in chapters 1 through 3? Primarily chapter 1. We didn't look at 2 and 3. In great detail, but what did we review or what did we look at on Sunday, chapter 1 in particular? What did he take the second generation through? Key word there is history. I'm giving you a hint there. All right, what did he take them through? What did he remind them of? I had a lot of after-class discussion in this last week, by the way. What did he remind them of? Grant?
Through their years in the wilderness, their prior attempt to enter Canaan and their rebellion, and how they got where they are.
That's right. All right. So this is where they're at. What is the time frame of Deuteronomy? Not what year, but how much time does Deuteronomy cover? By how long?
Like a couple of months, if that.
Yeah, if that. Maybe 5 weeks. Maybe 6 weeks. All right. So we just came off a study in Joshua, so we know this is going. So Moses is nearing death. He's got about five or 6 weeks before he passes off the baton to Joshua, and Joshua leads the people in. He already knows this because God tells him there in chapter 3 or 4 that command Joshua these things. He's going to pick up, he's going to carry and lead the people into the promised land or into Canaan. All right. So he's telling them about these things. And what do you think Moses' concern is for these people? Consider his relationship with them and how much time he spent with them. Also keep in mind that Moses is not going into the promised land, correct? And we know why. In fact, there in the latter part of chapter 3, I think it was that we looked at, he has that discussion with God, and God tells him to be silent. Don't speak of it anymore. This is my decision. All right, so Moses is not going into the promised land. But what is his concern for these people? I just want you to make the connection, the personal connection between Moses and these people that he's been with for how long? Over 40 years? What's his concern for them? Spiritual? Physical? What's he worried about? Yes, Al.
I think he's worried about all of it, but I think mostly spiritual. I think he's worried about them doing the same lumbering, the same
right.
Playing, the same... not trusting the Lord.
Right. He's already talked about why they didn't go into Canaan in the first place. 12 spies, we've looked at that, all right? Now they're getting ready to go in. He doesn't want them to make the same mistake, all right? And it builds up to this verse 1, chapter 4. So look at chapter 4, verse 1, another part of Moses' sermon here. And he says, "And now, O Israel, listen." Let's not read any farther, all right? Listen. All right. So now let's look at the question here. What does it mean to listen? We can approach that in a general sense and then bring it a little closer to home, how it applies to Moses. What does it mean to listen? I think this is a good question. Parents, you tell your kids to listen up. What do you mean by that? I'm going to give you. Yes, David.
Pay attention.
Okay. Pay attention. What else? Pay attention. What else? Yes. Understand, all right? Those are right. Keep. What else?
Obey.
Obey, all right? Obey. The word here actually suggests, when I was looking at this, actually suggests to hear so as to do, All right? And this idea of listening appears itself, brings itself up several times in Deuteronomy. Steve?
Heed my words.
That's right. Heed the words. All right? So when he says listen, all right, and that's why I said use the example of being a parent. All right? You tell your kids, listen up. I'm talking to you. All right? I want them to go in one ear and out the other. No, that's not what I want. I want them to go in, I want them to stop, and I want you to respond to what I'm saying. So when I think about this, and I'm reading this first verse here, and he says, Israel, listen to me. To me, there's a lot of passion there. To me, there's a lot of love. There's a lot of care coming from Moses as he's looking at this and saying, listen, I want you to listen what you're about ready to do and what I want you to do as far as God is concerned. Go over to Isaiah chapter 29, verse 13. I'm going to look at a couple of reference verses here. Isaiah 29. This is the siege on Jerusalem, and I'm going to pick it up in verse 13. And this will kind of give us a picture of what not to do. And he says, and Christ also quotes this in Matthew 15:8, 29:13 of Isaiah. And the Lord said, because this people draw with their mouth and honor me with their lips, while their hearts are far from me and their fear of me is a commandment taught by men. All right. This is what Moses didn't want to happen. Right, what he's seeing here is you're going to listen, but I want you to obey because the things I'm telling you are directly from God. They've got the Ten Commandments. They're going to review that again later on. So this is his focus. But notice what he says. Back to Deuteronomy chapter 4 now. Put this together, this idea of what does it mean to listen. All right. And now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and rules. We'll come back to that question that I am teaching you. Okay. What is the result of that? That you may live. All right? Live how? What is the live there? You're dealing with a physical nation. You're dealing with a nation that already has demonstrated death by sinning against God. All right? Going back to Numbers, Baal Peor, a couple of instances we look forward into Joshua and Achan's sin. All right? So, what does he mean there that you may live? What does it mean? You may live. What does he mean there? Is he physical? Is he spiritual? What's he talking about there? Al.
And I think he's saying if you disobey God, you're not going to.
Okay. All right. I think on the big on the big picture, it's a spiritual level. I think definitely we know that. I tend to think, and I look at that, I think there's somewhat of a physical sense here because we are still pointing to the physical Israel, and I think it means both. Grant.
Yeah, and then he says that you may live and go and take possession of the land.
Right.
Multiple times we've seen in Moses' life they almost didn't live. In fact, there were times that several of them did not live.
Right.
To get even this far, in fact, they just got done with everybody over 20 did not live.
That's right.
To hear this speech, so.
Yeah.
Very real potential that they might not live.
Right. That's how I kind of interpret this. I put this more on a physical level. Wes?
When you look at the blessings that are on this chapter, Deuteronomy, I think it's more also they're not just going to live, they're going to be successful.
Right.
They're going to have their enemies, they're going to be wealthy, they're going to have long lives. They're going to have successful lives.
Right.
And so I think it's more of not just you're going to survive. You guys are going to have great lives ahead of you if you follow this.
Right. What kind of land are they going into? Let's just talk about the promised land. What kind of land is it? What's the farmland like? Al.
Milk and honey.
Yeah, it's milk and honey. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's rich. And one of the things we've seen in this study with Joshua and that we'll be showing you in Deuteronomy is the constant message that God is with them, that God is fighting for them. So I think Wes is exactly right. All right. It's the understanding that just not that you're going to live physically, but man, are you going to live? All right. And I think you're right on that. So let's go to the second question and kind of put these two together, because in that verse, he says, listen to the statutes and rules. First of all, what's the difference between a statute and a rule? I hope you look that up. What's the difference between a statute, not a statue like concrete, but what's the difference between a statute and a rule? Because you see this a lot, my precepts and commands, my statutes and laws. What's a statute? Maybe think court of law. Maybe that will be helpful. What's a statute? Don't grab your phone and look it up. Yes, Mike.
Well, I had for a statute, commandment or an ordinance, and then under the rules, I have a verdict or a formal decree.
Okay. All right, good. So it's a statute is kind of like a written rule, okay? It's a written decree. So you have a statutes. I put down here written legislative authority is what this is. All right, so he says here, as you look at this and as we're listening to the statutes and rules. Now the question here, what are some synonyms for that? What are some other words that are connected with this idea of statutes and rules? What'd you come up with? Yes, yes.
God's laws.
God's laws. What else? I heard edicts. What else? If you had pulled up, you know, a Bible dictionary or done a treasury of scripture knowledge, you might have come up with a laundry list of words, really. Statutes, rules, precepts. What else? David.
I think the distinction between the two that I could find is... statute seems to be a word that is describing laws, what you can and can't do. And the other one is a word that describes almost judgments or rulings.
Right.
So maybe in our own way of framing that, we have a system where we pass laws. We also have a judicial system that rules on whether or not, or makes a decision about whether or not those laws have been violated. Or
right.
So that should be. So kind of covering the law and the judgment about it and about how we interact.
Right. Well put. Can you think of any? Yes.
Commandments.
Yep. The commandments. Any passages come to your mind? That's not part of the question, but there are any passages that come to your mind that suggest this same thinking or share with the same idea? Think of any? There's a host of them. Dave. Let's go to Psalms 19. I think that's right. go to Psalms 19. Real quick. That's actually what I had written down. All right. Very powerful passage here. If someone would read, help me out a little bit here. Psalms 19. Go ahead and read 7 through 11. That's kind of the key passage there. But read that. We're going to come back to this, if time permits, and look at something else. Yes, Jack, please.
The law of the Lord is perfect, reviving the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The rules of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, even much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and the drippings of the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is your servant warned. In keeping them, there is great reward.
Okay, in that list, as David pointed out there, what are some words that go along with this? What do you see? Just look at it. Just go, start with verse 7. What is it? The law. Look at verse, what else? Testimony, what else?
Precepts,
what else?
Commandments,
keep going. Okay, what else? I think we got about covered them all there. That's right. All right, so you have what, five? Five words then that are descriptive of the very similar thing we're trying to say here. All right, and so as you look at this, and now coming back to Deuteronomy, we're going to be kind of going back and forth here quite a bit. But coming back to Deuteronomy, we kind of put this together now. All right. And then we'll continue to look at this verses 1 through 13, which, by the way, is all we're really going to stay focused on tonight. And now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and the rules that I am teaching you, and do them that you may live and go in and take possession of the land that the Lord your God of fathers is giving you. All right? So, yes, Grant.
Just to throw out something that seems to be helpful when I was looking at these definitions, statutes seems to be what the legislature puts out. Rules is what the judiciary puts out.
Right, so make the application then, all right? Who puts out the statutes? God does, all right? I had a verse here, Exodus 15, 25, and 26. Let's go ahead and turn there, if you would, because that was kind of one of the thoughts I had in this. Over in Exodus chapter 15, beginning in verse 25, where the water was made sweet. Let me see, let's back up here. Verse 24, and the people grumbled against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" And he cried to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a log, and he threw it into the water, and the water became sweet. Then the Lord made for them a statute and a rule, right? Same idea there. Listen to how he describes this. And there he tested them, saying, "If you will diligently listen to the voice of the Lord your God," where do the statutes come from? All right? Statutes, those things coming out. "If you will diligently listen to the Lord your God and do what is right in his eyes and give ear to his commandments and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you that I put on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord your God, your healer." So I reference this verse because it kind of gives us a more of a description, the idea of listening to God, doing what God, in fact, the commentator here says, to do what God considers to be right. All right? To do what, you know, we might rephrase that, well, I'm going to do what God says. Well, the idea here is I'm doing what God considers to be in our best interest. Dan, did you have your hand up, Dan? Yes. Good.
Also, remember in the Hebrew, they reiterate something in different, the same thing, a little bit different word, because like God talks about their sins and iniquities.
Right.
Okay, have separated them. He's not talking about two different things. Sins and iniquities, pretty much the same.
That's right, yeah.
And then when he talks about, in Psalm 119, he talks about laws, statutes, precepts, all of these things through that long psalm. And so sometimes it's just to emphasize.
Right.
That they like to use, for whatever reason, different words, different expressions. And you may find a nuance of a meaning, but you still get the point that it's all from God.
That's right. Yeah. That's the whole point. It all comes down. You don't lose the effect, all right, with all these words. We know that it's all coming from God. It's all stemming from God. These things are coming from God. And here in Deuteronomy chapter 1, Moses is pointing them back to God. They've already demonstrated it working for them, and they've also demonstrated when it's failed for them. Any thoughts, comments as we're moving on through this? All right, let's keep on going here. So, looking at question 3 now, in Deuteronomy there, Deuteronomy chapter 4, notice what he says concerning what Israel was forbidden to do. I'm going to read this together here. Beginning in verse 2 of Deuteronomy 4, "You shall not add to the word that I command you, nor take from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God that I command you." You know, Moses doesn't make any bones about getting right to the point. All right? Listen, understand his statutes, his commands. But in keeping with the question here, why was Israel forbidden to add or take away from God's word? So what's the obvious answer? Let's deal with the more obvious answer. Why were they forbidden to do that? Tyler.
Since you do it, it's not God's word.
That's right. Right, it's not God. It's not part of God and what He's commanded, what He's directed them. Any other thoughts on that? Can we elaborate on that a little bit more? Yes?
God is the author of the law. They didn't have the authority to add or take away.
Exactly. So one of the key things in this class has been history, looking back at history and learning. Grant, did you have a thought?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, part of this law is also a contract
right
with them. So having made this contract, they can't just go modifying it as they see fit. These are the conditions, you know, being obedient are the conditions that he's set down in order for them to receive the land and all the blessings and everything.
That's right.
As soon as they modify it, they have broken the covenant.
Right, exactly. So there's the example for us. All right, there's the example for it. We have God's sovereignty. If they were to change this, go and worship the other gods, whatever it is, the things that we see in Israel's history, all right, that would, in their minds, deny the sovereignty of God. They would make God incomplete, number of phrases we might use there. But the question now is, and we make this connection with history and its value to us, number one, does this apply to us? Easiest question of the night. Yes, there we go. All right. Yes, this applies to us. Now, my question is, all right, how? I mean, what's the connection that we make for us, all right? What's the history lesson? What is it that we carry from here, from Israel's example to right now? All right, you know, we talk about biblical authority, all right? Personally, a subject I think we need to visit on a regular basis, all right? For a number of reasons, all right? Apostasy, getting away from the truth, following down a weary road, whatever it might be. There's the importance of following God's word. So that's the first takeaway. Go to 2 John, if you would. Let's just kind of put this in perspective here. I won't say 2 John chapter 1, but 2 John verses 7 and 11. A lot of times we might refer to Revelation 22, 18 through 19, which is a good passage there. I think he's dealing directly with the book of Revelation right there, in that passage there. Not to say that doesn't have an impact on us. But 2 John, somebody read verses 7 through 11 for us right there. Notice what John is saying here, and then just kind of make a connection. Yes.
For many deceivers have gone out into the world, those who did not acknowledge Jesus Christ as coming in the flesh. This is the deceiver and the antichrist. Watch yourselves that you do not lose what we have accomplished, but that you may receive a full reward. Anyone who goes too far and does not abide in the teaching of Christ does not have God. The one who abides in the teaching, he has both the Father and the Son. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not receive him into your house. And do not give him a greeting, for the one who gives him a greeting participates in his evil deeds.
Do you see any connection? I'm not suggesting here that this passage is a direct correlation to what we're seeing in the Old Testament. But do you see any connections with what God instructed the children of Israel at all? Does anything stand out there for you? Any connections at all? Jack?
Well, going back to the verse from Deuteronomy, it seems, don't add or take from it that you may keep the commandments of the Lord.
Right.
Which tells me not only the things that are said, which I agree with, that men don't have authority, but we can't do it. We don't know. And that either if we were to add to it, then it would be difficult to follow. But even if you did, then you're not obeying God.
Right.
Once you add to it, I mean, that's kind of the same thing as Tyler said. It's not God's word, but the result of that is, you know, you change the recipe, then you don't have those same cake or whatever.
Right. So. Yeah, exactly. When I look at this, one of the things that stands out for me, I'm looking at 2 John for a moment here. If anyone comes to you, does not bring this teaching, do not receive him, forever greets him, takes part in his wicked works. I look at this passage and I think back to the directions that God gave Moses, or Moses gave the people, all right? And what was God concerned about going into the land? What was his concern? You know, we talked about the complete destruction, annihilation, devote the things to destruction. But what was God's concern that he was worried that might happen to the people when they go into the land with the Canaanites? Al.
Contamination. He was worried about them absorbing the other nations and following their gods.
Right. All right. This is why he gave the instructions on marriage, all right, to wipe them out. In this passage here in Deuteronomy, we'll see, probably won't get to that tonight, but we'll see the example of Baal Peor over in Numbers 25, all right? And you get over there and they whored with the people, and the people invited them and they ate with them and they partaked and worshiped their gods, and how many people died? You remember? Yep, 24,000 people died as a result of this sin, all right? So that's what I'm saying here. I think that's the connection for us. As we look at the laws of God, the laws of Christ under the New Testament system that we are under now, we can constantly go back to the Old Testament and draw example after example, and we don't want to lose sight of that. And I think that's the big picture on this as I'm looking at this. It points back... It points back to the idea of a set standard, all right? I was trying to think of an example. I don't know if I've used this in class before, but I'm going to, so you get to hear it again. Coming out of manufacturing for years, we had a thing called the Machinist Handbook, And it was nicknamed the Machinist Bible. That's actually what they called it in the machine shop. All right. But what was unique about this is this was the mathematical standard. Anybody who deals in math or engineering will know what I'm talking about right now. This is the standard. All right. So in other words, I could make, design a part based on that mathematical standard, and that is recognized worldwide. Now we can talk about metric system and stuff like that. Set that aside. That is a recognized standard. Anything, any measurements in that book is just a wealth of information on metallurgy and all kinds of things. But it is the rule. It's not questioned. If you're building something or designing something, you can look at that, and that is your comparison. And I remember that in all my years of manufacturing, how important that was. That was my standard. So I thought about that as I was preparing for this class this week, and I thought that's exactly what God is telling us here. We have a standard. God told Moses, here is the standard. Don't mess with it. All right? On top of some of the things we said, God has provided for them, God has fought for them. God is giving them the land. How many, if we were to count that phrase, the land I am giving you, I would wonder how many times that comes up throughout the Pentateuch and into the law. All right. I am giving you this land. There's just a host of information. So I can keep going, but I'll get going here. Any questions? Any more thoughts on question three? Yes, Nita.
But I was thinking about adding to the portion of this because the Israelites would try to worship God the
way he
said,
and then they wanted to add all this stuff. That they were doing idols and that kind of thing, and yet they were still supposedly worshiping God. Right. And I think about us today, and that's what we have to be careful of in our worship to Him, in our lives, and everything. Not to add on to the simple example we have in the New Testament. Right. Yeah. And the adding and taking away can be just very. What's the word I'm looking for? Help me out here.
Fluid.
Say that again.
Fluid.
Yes. Thank you. It can be just real simple. It can be obvious. A number of examples here. Continuing this thought, go to question number four there. All right. Let's go to Numbers 25. We need to go here and look at this. Numbers 25. And I'm going to ask somebody to read. It says 3 through 9. But I'm going to ask somebody to read 1 through 9. I think we need to get the whole context here. Numbers 25, 1 through 9. Who's got it? David.
While Israel lived in Shittim, the people began to war with the daughters of Moab. These invited the people to the sacrifices of their gods, and the people ate and bowed down to their gods. So Israel yoked himself to Baal of Peor, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. And the Lord said to Moses, take all the chiefs of the people and hang them in the sun before the Lord, that the fierce anger of the Lord may turn away from Israel. And Moses said to the judges of Israel, each of you kill those of his men who have yoked themselves to Baal of Peor. And behold, one of the people of Israel came and brought a Midianite woman to his family in the sight of Moses and in the sight of the whole congregation of the people of Israel while they were weeping in the entrance of the tent of meeting. When Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, son of Aaron the priest, saw it, he rose and left the congregation and took a spear in his hand, and went after the man of Israel into the chamber and pierced both of them, the man of Israel and the woman through her belly. Thus the plague on the people of Israel was stopped. Nevertheless, those who died by the plague were 24,000.
Wow. Every time I read that, it's just like, wow. How many people died?
24,002.
Say that again?
24,002.
Yes, let's get the numbers down. That's right. Yeah, 24,002. All right. What were the question here, what were the consequences of this sin? And I'm going to come back on Osha. So what were the consequences? Remember back in verse 1, and you shall live. I think there's a connection here. All right. They sinned, therefore they didn't live. So what were the consequences? Death. All right. And let's not forget the impact and the ripple effect of sin. We've talked about this in our study in Joshua, so I won't go into that. But I want you to notice the pattern of sin here in Numbers chapter 25, since that's what we're talking about. We're talking about obedience. We're talking about consequences. And just notice the things that they do that were completely contrary to the statutes of the Lord, right? told them to stay away. Don't mingle with them. Don't visit with them. Don't just stay away. All right, so when Israel lived in Shittim, the people began to whore with the daughters of Moab. I think we all know what that means. All right. They invited the people to the sacrifices of their gods. Come join us. Yeah, no big deal, right? No big deal. And the people ate and bowed down to their gods. What are you seeing here? Participation, right? They're beginning to participate. They're going. Now they've already entered into sin. All right? So Israel, this word, look at verse 3. Israel did what? Yoked themselves. What does that mean to yoke yourself? Christ uses this in the New Testament. Paul uses it. Don't be yoked with unbelievers. What's a yoke, first of all? And we're not talking about the inside of an egg. Yes?
A thing that two cows or two horses or two steers or whatever are used in plowing so that they pull together.
Right. If one goes left, the other one has either to go left or whatever. Exactly. All right. So this is his point there. He's saying they yoked themselves. And so in other words, what happened was they became one in that sin. All right. They were unified in that. Results of that were, looks like some people were hung. A man and a woman had a sword driven through them or a spear driven through them. And 24,000 people died. All right. There's the consequences of sin. Now let's go back to verse 1 for a moment in Deuteronomy when Moses says, listen, Israel, this is what I don't want to happen. We don't want to repeat this. All right. This is what, as you move forward, don't allow this to happen. Learn from these things. Continue on. We got about 9 minutes. So let's go to question number 5, if you would. We're talking about keeping commandments. There's something here interesting. There's some wording here there in verse 9. Look at verse 9. Let me read this together first, beginning in verse 3. Your eyes have seen what the Lord did at Baal Peor, for the Lord your God destroyed from among you all the men who followed the Baal of Peor. But you who have held fast to the Lord your God are still alive today, or all alive today. See, I have taught you statutes and rules as the Lord God, my God, commanded me that you should do them in the land that you are entering to take possession of it. Keep them and do them, for that will be your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples, who, when they hear all of these statutes, will say, surely this great people is wise and understanding. For what great nation is there that has a God so near as to the Lord their God as to us whenever we call upon him? And what great nation is there that has his statutes and rules so righteous as all this law that I set before you today? Only take care and keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things your eyes have seen, lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. Make them known to your children and to your children's children. Let's come to the question now. I wanted to kind of make sure we got the context of that. What is the difference? So we've talked about commandments and statutes, right? I think there's clear understanding. So what's the difference between that and the phrase, keep your soul? I thought this was a really good question. What does that mean to keep your soul? Anything come to mind? Jack?
I think it could mean consider your soul, or when you're making decisions, don't think about the physical, but think about the spiritual.
Right. Right? Anything else? Yes, Al? Right?
The Lord promises that we won't if we keep his commandments and statutes.
That's right. The principle there is to guard that which will destroy your soul. Tyler?
Like the scripture that you brought up in Isaiah, it talks about they teach the fear of the Lord as the commandment of men. Here, remember what the Lord did, and that's why you obey these laws.
Right.
It's not the laws themselves that are the fear of the Lord for you. And so it's like he's saying, I'm going to give you these rules, but don't forget why you're actually obeying them and get to the point where you're just obeying them as vain repetition.
Right, right. If we could, go back to Psalms 19 again. I said I was going to come back to that passage. I want to make another application here. that Dave brought up a moment ago. But just notice, number of passages, Ephesians 6, a number of passages came to my mind, but there are Psalm 19. Notice again, but instead of focusing on the law, the testimony, the precepts, the commandments, notice the effect on the person, all right? The law of the Lord is perfect, doing what? Reviving the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, doing what? Making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. All right? The connection there that we see are these commandments, these statutes, are doing what to the health of the soul? What are they doing helping us to understand the value of the soul? So I think when I look at that and I think the keeping of the soul, that's the seat. The heart is the seat of everything. What is God going to judge us on? Yes, they've got to keep the law, as Tyler pointed out. They've got to keep the law. One of the things that I've heard a lot growing up, and I think we understand this, is the Old Testament was a rule, was a law of do's and don'ts. It wasn't a matter of the heart. I could not disagree with that more. All right? The Old Testament was a law and law of the heart. It was a law of grace. It was a law of mercy, because we can see example of God's grace and mercy being extended to His people or other people. We looked at that in our study in Joshua. Let's go to Dave, and then we'll come back. Yes.
One other thought on that.
Sure.
And I think this is what you were alluding to in your last reference. I think of it similarly to keep your house. Right? Meaning invest effort in it to make it orderly.
Right.
And so it's not a matter of just keeping, preserving it, but it's also do work to make sure that it's of proper order.
Right. Right, exactly. On the next question, I'm going to come back to that. Yes, Karina.
Something that stands out to me, and all this, I think I personally have a tendency when reading the Old Testament to be very humanized in my view of it.
Right.
Something that stood out to me in college was I was taking classes on biblical archaeology, and they talked about the Israelites actually being not a monotheistic religion, that they had multiple gods. And that stood out to me, and I thought that was weird. And then I went back and I was like, oh, they did worship all these other gods. And to me, it's just that reflection of God's trying to create a holy people who will tell His story for literally thousands of years to come. Still look back and say, oh, they weren't monotheistic because they disobeyed God. And to me, I don't know, there's something like powerful about that, of like God sees that bigger picture.
Right.
Also, as well as like your soul in both senses, in the physical and in the spiritual.
Right, right. God does, and that's what He wants them to see. You know, when He talks about teach it to your children and the next generation, He doesn't mean stop at your grandkids. Right? What does He mean there? With the phrase in your next generation, what does that mean? It means keep it going. It means you keep it going. Let's look at, we got 5 minutes. Let's look at question 6, all right? What specific thing were the people supposed to do and why? I didn't ask Brother Posey what he had in mind, but I know what I'm going with on this. What specific thing? Keeping in line with the idea of history and the theme of Deuteronomy chapter 6, what do you think was the thing He wanted them to keep doing? Yes. There you go. All right, so let's talk about that for a moment, all right? What specific thing? That's it, okay? Make them known to your children. And what has been our theme? History, right? Our theme here has been teach your children these things, all right? The obvious, let's just address the obvious here. The obvious here is that they don't fall from the living God. And how many passages come to our mind? Hosea, a number of passages we look to. We think about in the Old Testament, they didn't teach their children. A generation rose up that knew not God. We know our history there, all right? So we know that's why. But I want to bring this home, or hopefully take a few minutes here and ask yourself this question. We kind of concluded class on Sunday with this idea, so it's a good way to wrap things up. How do we do that? I mean, teach your children. Parents, let me put this out to parents. When you see your responsibility to teach your children, what do you take from this? Brother Posey made some really good points on Sunday about that, about how we look to the church sometimes, but it's not the church's responsibility. Church helps out where it can, All right? But when you see this idea of teaching your children, and if you're truly concerned about them not forgetting, what do you do? I'm going to put it out to the fathers first. Dads, what do you do? What are you doing? What are you doing to ensure this doesn't happen? I'm putting you all on the spot here. Yes, Jack?
One thing I've learned as the kids got older is to try to give a reason and a reward or an apple or a carrot, whatever you want to say, rather than just do it because I said so.
Right.
That's necessary when they're younger because there's dangers and that kind of thing, but at least that's the attempt. And hopefully, this is also the reason that I'm doing it, because that usually, you know, your life is the loudest talk.
Right.
They're going to hear.
Right, right. Al, yeah, Janet, and then Dave.
One of the things I think is most important is don't be a hypocrite.
Right.
Don't do something to destroy your children's faith.
Yeah, don't do as I do as I say type mentality. Yeah.
Be part of the world and then laugh at them because they're not studying.
Right.
You have to live it.
That's right.
Be the example.
All right, Dave.
Just very easy practical is repetition, right? That's the way, especially at younger ages, that it gets ingrained in their heads.
Right. Yes, I wrote down some things here. Just I kind of went fatherly on this. and, you know, you kind of get hard on yourself sometimes. And one of the things, kind of piggybacking off what was said there, is the importance of, number one, before taking my own faith seriously. All right? And I hope that and then there will be the ripple effect into demonstration and showing my kids, whatnot. But I've got to start. Moses is telling these people, these parents, take your faith seriously, all right? Take it seriously so you will appreciate what happened to Baal Peor. So you will remember those things, and you will remember the good things of God. When I take it seriously, I embrace those things. I get excited about it, all right? And I ask myself questions. I wrote down a couple things. What is it that I want my children to see so that they will remember these things, all right? I'm going to ask myself, are they seeing the decisions I make? Right, and this comes back to the daily example. Are they seeing? Are they hearing the words of my heart? And I'm emphasizing heart there. Are they seeing? Are they hearing? And I was trying to think of some examples. You know, and I guess a classic example would be our marriage. You know, how we treat our wives, dads. You know, how do we want our sons to treat a young lady, and vice versa? So there's a number or a host of examples there. And then another question I'm asking myself is, what memories am I leaving them? All right. In other words, in all this raising, because I tell you what, not to get kind of sappy here, but it goes by fast. Let me tell you. I got my youngest one at 16, and he's talking about colleges and stuff. And I'm like, no, not yet. You're staying home, you know. Sierra College is 5 minutes away. Stay home. And he is. He's going to stay home and go to school. So, but I'm looking at that, and Carolyn and I look at that and go, man, this is going by so fast. All right? And I can't help but ask myself, have we done our best to instill? Have we demonstrated? Do they go out and say, I see the love of God in mom and dad? Did I make mistakes? Oh, yeah. There's not a parent in this room who hasn't made mistakes and fallen short and regretted things that their kids saw and heard. All right? But the question is, how did we respond to that? How did we come back from that? Okay, we'll finish this up. Look at the second part of chapter 4 for Sunday. And you still got me for a couple more classes. Thank you very much.